Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 14 of the Plus 3 Podcast of Nerdiness. I'm Evan.
I'm Derek.
And I'm Ryan.
And we're here to bring you all things nerdy. So we've got a fun episode today. We are excited to bring you a new topic, something we haven't really talked much about before. We're going to be talking about our favorite nerdy books, or our favorite books in the sci-fi slash fantasy genres. Before then, we, of course, are going to bring you all of our updates, what we've been up to, and some of the latest news in the world of nerds. So let's go ahead and get started. Derek, what have you been up to these last few weeks?
It's been kind of a slow couple weeks, but I did get mostly some gaming in. I just got Yoshi's Crafted World for Switch, which I cannot recommend highly enough. It's awesome. It's got really good platforming elements. It's got puzzle elements. The art style is really cool. It's got the kind of everything is like a homemade feel to it. Like it's all like arts and crafts style. It's challenging if you want it to be challenging. There's a couple different difficulty settings that are nice. And then the biggest thing is like the targeting mechanic. So you have all these eggs that trail behind you, and you can swap and turn it into a target reticle on your screen, and you can throw the eggs at different enemies or different aspects of the environment or background. And so there's just a lot of like hidden things, which makes the replayability pretty high on this game. But yeah, I'm really happy with it so far. I'm not that far into it, and I'm really excited to kind of dig in. Other than that, I guess we did a little bit of gaming. We played a fun little game called Slapshot. That was a good time. The three of us played with another friend, and it's the simplest little game. You have this little like peg figure, and you're playing hockey. And all you do is rotate your mouse to swing your stick around, but it's incredibly challenging, and it shouldn't be. it's really frustrating because you're like, oh my God, this is so easy. And you just swing and miss constantly, and we're still getting used to it. But it's a lot of fun. I mean, you guys had fun playing that the other night, right?
Yep.
Yeah. It brought back memories for me of when we first started playing Rocket League, where it's like you can see in your mind what you want to do, and then you just, your fingers don't do it. So I don't know. It led to a lot of laughs, a lot of unfortunate own goals. It's free on Steam. So, I mean, you can't beat the price.
Yeah, it was fun. It was fun. I played a little Overwatch. There's a new character called Baptiste, and he's a healer with a lot of cool abilities. So that was fun. I also watched my beloved San Francisco Shock lose in the stage one finals of Overwatch League. They took the undefeated, the best team in Overwatch League all the way to a seventh map and came up just a little bit short. So that was kind of a bummer, but stage two starts this next weekend and I'm pumped about that. I haven't had time for a lot of reading or comics. I'm still working on Secret Empire and Fall of Gondolin. So hopefully by the next pod, I'll have those both finished up and I can discuss them. But yeah, that's what I've been up to. Ryan, how about you?
I have been playing some Hearthstone. I got motivated after our last pod. I downloaded the app on my phone and I've been playing a little bit. And I forgot how much fun it is. Like, I mean, I haven't put any money into it, but it's just kind of fun to pick up and play. It kind of scratches the itch of playing a card game when I don't have anyone to play with.
I wish you would have told me you'd pick this back up.
Well, I'm telling you now. So no. If you guys want to join in.
I probably will. Guess.
Yeah, probably. I can just sit on my phone.
Yeah, exactly. It's a lot of fun. And then I've been playing. I got it for Christmas, but I just started playing Assassin's Creed Odyssey, which is a lot of fun. It's just kind of a mindless... they call it an RPG, but I wouldn't really say it is. But it's a lot of fun. I enjoy it. I just kind of like the theme of the games and how they tell the stories. Sometimes the execution of the mechanics of the game are a bit to be desired, as some of you all may know. And then I've also finished the book one of the Magician series, which I enjoyed very much. So thank you, Derek, for the recommendation and encouraging me to get in on reading that book.
Are you watching the show yet?
I have not. I probably am going to, I'm going to try and get through the second book, I think, before I start watching the show. And
it won't matter when you, like, they do everything out of order. It's really weird. Yeah. Okay. Like, things that happen in book three happen in season one of the show and vice versa. Things that happen in book one don't happen, are happening right now in, like, season four. It's really weird. They do everything out of order, but it works. I don't know. Huh.
Interesting.
So, don't feel like you have to read the whole thing before you watch the show, because it's all out of order.
Well, maybe after, my wife and I started watching Game of Thrones, and we're going to try and finish all seven seasons before the premiere.
Yeah, how's that timeline working out for you?
Not too bad yet. I don't feel the crunch yet, but ask me next week and that might be a different answer. So maybe after we finish Game of Thrones, I'll start watching Magicians again. I don't have much time for any other shows right now. There's there's 65 or 70 episodes of Game of Thrones, and we probably have about 55 left.
Yeah, your timeline included watching over four hours of Game of Thrones Friday, Saturday, and Sunday nights, and
I don't see what the problem is.
Behind on that.
Man, that gets kind of heavy. I binged
That's
it.
That's a lot.
Yeah, I binged it like a year ago, and it's such like a, I don't know. It can get depressing, kind of, you know?
It can. It really can. So we've been trying to mix in some funny shows to kind of keep it light and keep us
good plan
not depressed. And then we all hung out. I know we're going to talk about this a little bit later, but we had a weekend where we all kind of got together and played some games. But before we get to that, Evan, what have you been up to?
Yeah, so I had a couple fun game nights over the last few weeks. My wife and I got together with another couple, and we played Forbidden Skies, which I have talked about before, but it's a Matt Leacock co-op game where you're like stuck up on this platform and you're trying to get your ship to work again. You're working together. It's got some tile placement, so you're like working together to lay down these tiles, and eventually you're trying to connect a circuit, which is a circuit in the game, but it's also like a real life circuit, and you're trying to activate your ship so you can escape from the platform and get away, I guess. And it's really hard. We played on the lowest difficulty and we lost twice. So either we're really bad at it, or it's really hard, or some combination of those two things. But we had a lot of fun playing that. And then when we were done, I was talking to them about Viticulture, which again has probably become one of my favorite board games of all time. And I told them about how you make wine and how every time I've played, or at least most times I've played, I've had a glass of wine to go with it. And they're like, that sounds really fun. And I said, well, I don't have it, but I'll buy it if you guys want to play it. And they're like, yeah, let's do it next week. So I bought it, came in during the middle of the week, and then the next week we all sat down and played it. And I was a little worried because it's, I think, a little heavier than what some of them, than what they have played before. And my wife doesn't really like that style of game. So I was kind of worried about it. I was kind of worried about teaching it because I thought it'd be a little bit hard to teach. But so the night before we went and played with this other couple, I sat down and taught my wife how to play, and we played a two-player game, and she actually kind of liked it. So I was really happy about that. And then we went and played with this other couple, and we all had a really, really good time. So that was a huge success for me. I was super excited about that. And I'm hoping that we can play it again some more, because again, I absolutely love Viticulture. It's probably my favorite game.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was super fun. So yeah, and actually I hung out with the guy and the couple nights ago, and I just had Viticulture like out on my table, and he pointed out, he's like, I love that game so much, we need to play it again. And I was
good.
So yeah, that was a great time. Then yeah, we had this weekend where we got together last week, so we'll talk about that in a bit. Then just a couple nights ago, I finally finished the Two Towers. I feel like I've been reading that for a while. It actually hasn't been that long, because I track it all on Goodreads.
Yeah, I just saw that pop up. I just updated my Goodreads last night, and I saw it pop up, and I was like, oh, he finished it.
Yeah, I did. So nice. Yeah, I think I started it in like late January, so I guess it has been 2 months, I guess. But whatever, I mean, I'm done. I enjoyed it, and now I'm moving on to the Return of the King, which I haven't read before, so I'm excited. I was kind of interested to see some of the differences between the books and the movies. Like, I don't know, like the biggest thing I noticed was that some of the way that like Shelob's Lair plays out is a little bit different. Like the movies have this whole little thing where Sam leaves Frodo for a while. And I mean, I don't know. That's different in the book, it seems like. So, I don't know. That's kind of interesting, I thought.
Yeah, there are some. There are definitely some differences, but I mean, overall, it. I don't think it makes a huge, you know, a huge impact.
No,
the changes were pretty good, but yeah, no, there are some differences.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm loving those. I'm excited to be done though, so that I can move on to other stuff, which. I think we're probably going to talk about some of the books I'm going to think about moving on to later in the discussion. But anyway, yeah, that's mostly what I've been up to. Derek mentioned a few of the games that we've been playing. We played a few games on Tabletopia. The three of us played Viva Java Dice, which I think we talked about a little bit in the last pod. But I don't know. I thought that was a really fun one. Ryan, you played it for the first time. What did you think of it?
I really enjoy it. I mean, it's kind of fun playing a roll and write with friends. I guess it's not really a write, but you roll dice and you put stuff out and you make coffee. So anytime I can do something with coffee, I'm going to enjoy it.
Yeah, that's a good one. I mean, it's kind of like a next level Yahtzee, I guess, you know?
Yeah, that would be a good way to describe it, I think.
It's a quick little filler game. It's super fun. I like it.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, that's mostly what I've been up to. So, I guess since we've been talking about it, we might as well go over what we did this past weekend. So, last weekend, the three of us and three other guys got together at a friend's house and we, watched March Madness. We played some board games, we played some video games and just had a really good time overall. So, yeah, I don't know, We played, how many games did we play, guys? We played three or four games?
Yeah, we played so much KeyForge.
Oh, yeah.
So much.
Yeah, a lot of KeyForge.
Which was great. At one point in time, there were we were all sitting around the same table, and there were three matchups of KeyForge going on, which was great. And then we just rotate around. Yeah, it was just a lot of fun. And we had taught one of our friends, he had gotten a deck from Evan for Christmas, but hadn't played yet, so he finally got to learn and play the game, and he really enjoyed it.
Yeah, he did.
that was a lot of fun, and yeah, we got a lot of good games in. I got to try out some of my decks that I haven't really played with much, so that was good. I mean, I'll play KeyForge anywhere, anytime. So yeah,
and Ryan, I know you got into an epic series with Puff. Did you guys play a best of three?
We played a best of three that's unfinished. We never got to finish our best of three. By the end of the night, we were both kind of too tired to finish the best of three. And then on Sunday, we never got around to finishing. But it was very intense. I mean, we had two really quick rounds, and that to everyone else's rounds, it seemed like, another friend was learning. But I think, was it you and Derek had a round that it was like 40 minutes or something crazy Derek. Like that. It was a long time.
Derek's I was playing a deck that was a stall deck.
Yeah.
It was dumb.
It was stally.
Yeah, it was. I actually got closer than I thought. I mean, I did end up having two keys forged by the end, but I was, stalling hard.
Yep. Yeah, so that was good. And then I think maybe my favorite part was that we finally, after having played Wingspan on Tabletopia several times, we finally played an actual in-person physical copy of the game, and we had five of us for that one. One guy wasn't there yet, so we played a five-person game, and that was super fun. It's the artwork and the components and everything are so well done in that game that it really adds a lot to be able to play it in person. And I had a really good time playing that one. So, Ryan, I think that was your first time playing, right? So what was your thoughts now that you've finally played this game that we've been hyping forever?
I really enjoyed it. It was probably, I would say it was as good as advertised. And I'm usually not a huge engine builder fan just because it's, I don't know, I'm not that good at them. But I had a lot of fun, and the artwork is actually really amazing, even though I don't like birds that much. But it is really good, and it's a lot of fun, and there's just a lot of different things to do. And I mean, you're not really, I mean, it's not like a take that kind of thing like Red Dragon Inn is when we played it. But I enjoyed it. I had a lot of fun. Stonemaier games are always excellent.
I got to say, seeing this game in person, the component quality and the artwork completely blew me away. It mm-hmm. was just, oh, it was so fantastic. And I'm for sure going to get this game in person. And actually, so I took some pictures and put it up on our Instagram and Facebook account. And I got a reply from the artist from Wingspan. So I had a little conversation with her on Instagram, which was great. And I found out that it was, there were two artists, and it took them 5 months, and they did 170 individual drawings for this game, which is just crazy.
Wow.
Yeah, it was nuts. But it was kind of cool to interact with her and kind of get her perspective on things. And but yeah, the game is so good, and I'll be picking it up. I mean, we've talked at length about Wingspan, so we'll move on. yeah, but then we got to play a little bit of Red Dragon Inn, which I don't know if you guys had never heard of about that game before, had you?
I'd heard of it, but I'd never played it.
Okay, so Red Dragon Inn is very much like a beer and pretzels game. You know, you just kind of sit around a table, drink beer, eat pretzels. You don't have to. It's not a very intense game. It's very take that. It's very much, oh, well, you have this card that does that. Oh, wait, I have this card that blocks that and does it back to you.
Yep.
So the theme is that you're all fantasy characters in an like in a tavern, and you're trying to drink each other under the table, and you have a alcohol content marker and a fortitude marker. And if they reach, you pass out. If they reach each other, you pass out and you're out of the game. Or if you run out of money to buy drinks, you're out of the game. So you're trying to get your opponents drunk and make them pass out, basically, and be the last one alive or still standing, I guess. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. It's a game that I borrowed from a friend, and I really like the game, but I don't think I would ever own it. It's a little too like take that for me, you know. Yeah. I don't know, but it's fun as long as there's no hard feelings, because people can get kind of touchy about take that games. But
yeah,
it was good.
I think that, well, first of all, I really liked it because of the theme. I don't know, it's just kind of funny that it was like the adventurers that are done with their adventure and now are celebrating their successful quest or whatever, so that was pretty fun. And then also you're playing as a character that's like a traditional RPG role, right? So like I was a cleric or a priest or something like that, so my deck that I was going through had a lot of healing cards where I could heal myself, or I could even heal other people and they'd have to pay me to do it. But then there was like, I can't remember what some of the other ones were, but they were all fairly thematic. So
like one of our friends had a bard, and so he had a card that said, well, you just sang a song, and now everybody has to pay you a gold for coming up with this song, for providing entertainment, like stuff like that.
Yeah,
I don't know. It was good.
Well, the other thing I kind of liked about it is that I felt like, so probably the most well-known or kind of the poster child for Take That games is Munchkin. And I mean, I don't know. I've played Munchkin quite a bit and I like it, but I think all three of us are kind of to this point where if people say, let's play Munchkin, we say, let's not. And yeah. And I feel like what I liked about this one better than Munchkin is Munchkin gets to that point where it's like somebody's level 9 and then you take a turn and then everybody just dumps on him and it takes forever to resolve all the effects and it just feels kind of bad. And I think you could maybe do that in this game, but in Red Dragon Inn, but it felt a little bit less like just the mechanics or whatever, the way the game is set up didn't lend itself to that style as much. It's kind of more of a constant take that, which if everybody's doing it to everybody, it's a little bit more fair, I guess. I don't know.
Right, right. And I just kind of like, you see where everybody's at. And so that person, nobody gets too far ahead, because if they do, everybody targets them. And mm-hmm. kind of brings them in line with everybody else. My one complaint is I think it's too easy to get knocked out of the game very early.
Yeah.
And then you have to just kind of sit around while the game finishes. Like, we had a friend that got knocked out after his first turn, which was very frustrating. Go ahead. Well, I had that happen to me the very first time I played that game, which left a bad taste in my mouth, you know, and it took me a while to try the game again. But I... I don't know. That's the only thing I worry about is like the early knockouts. Other than that, I really enjoy it.
Yeah. So that was Red Dragon Inn. And again, that one was fun. Just that was, I think we did that one after we had been watching basketball for a while, and we just kind of wanted to, it was somewhat of a filler, I guess. So it worked for that. The other board game that we played was a round of Viticulture. And the thing that was fun about this is that it was a 6-person game, which is the maximum number you can have. It was fun, but also a little bit frustrating because with Viticulture, of course, it's a worker placement. And so as you're placing your workers, you're blocking other people from taking the same actions. And so towards the end of the game, it got very crowded with people trying to all do the same actions. And in fact, I got a little frustrated because I had a very clear path to victory, but I did not have enough spot. There were not enough spots in the actions that I needed to take. And somebody, Ryan, blocked my spot, so I ended up not winning. But, you know, that's how the game goes, and that's what it is. But anyway, I thought it was fun. It was a little, I would say if you're going to play with six, be prepared for a 3+ hour experience. If everybody knows how to play, maybe a little faster. But it was one of those things where we were playing and we were trying to keep the rate of play up, but we were also just having a good time drinking wine, hanging out, talking to each other. So I had a really enjoyable experience. It didn't really ever feel like a slog to me, I guess. So that was my thought on 6-person Viticulture.
I think Viticulture is best at like 4, maybe. Yeah. But don't get me wrong. I had a great time. Mm-hmm. It's still a great game at 6. It's one of the very few games I felt like 6 actually works. A lot of times when they try to push that player count way up, it just doesn't work. But I think it still works at 6. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was a lot longer. We also had people playing for the first time ever, and we were watching basketball at the same time. But yeah, I had a great time. I will play Viticulture anytime. I really like that game.
And the person that played for the first time actually won, so that was cool.
He did.
Yeah, he sharked us.
Yeah, and Ryan got to play Kingmaker, so that was...
I did.
Yeah.
Unintentionally, I might add, but I did.
So, yeah, those are the board games that we played. And then we played a fair amount of Switch games, too. Derek and I both had our Switches, so we played some 6-person Smash, which is fun. I feel like if you're playing that many, you just got to... Like, we have some guys in our group, one in particular, that's pretty into competitive Smash and, like, you know, the no items. And that's probably my preferred way to play, too, you know, the more competitive version. But when you have that many people, it's just fun to turn the items on and turn the stage hazards on and just
embrace
fun.
The chaos. Just yeah. embrace it.
It's the only way I can succeed in that game is to embrace chaos.
So, yeah, we had a really good time. I was glad to be able to get together and hang out. So... we got to get more of those in if we can. I know it gets harder, but it's so much fun.
Somebody lives in Nashville.
Well, yeah, whatever. There's nothing saying you guys can't come visit.
Oh man! All right. All right. Well, let's wrap this up and we'll move on to the news. First of all, I think I'm gonna let Evan talk about the new Halo Master Chief Collection.
All right. Well, the Halo Master Chief Collection has been out for Xbox One for a while, but the announcement that we got in the last couple of weeks is that whole collection is coming to PC. And I am so excited about this. The Master Chief Collection includes Halo, Halo 2, Halo 3, Halo 4, Halo Reach, and Halo ODST. So I was a huge Halo fan back in the day. I bought an Xbox. The Xbox was actually the first console I ever owned. And I basically bought it because of Halo, and then Halo 2 came out shortly after that. So I played those games a lot. And I actually had Halo for PC way back in the day. But anyway, ever since the Master Chief Collection came out to Xbox One, I've been wanting to play it. And I've played it a few times at friends' houses. And I have, like, I've several times considered buying an Xbox One just for this collection. But now I'm glad I didn't, because it is all coming to PC. And so the way they're going to do it is it's going to be available on both Steam and the Microsoft Store, which I think is also another huge plus that they're going to be releasing it through Steam. But then they're going to roll it out one game at a time in chronological order. So the first game coming out is actually going to be Halo Reach, since that's like a prequel to Halo. And then they haven't really announced the dates yet. They say the whole thing is going to be out this year, 2019. So I would expect the first one to be out pretty soon, and I think they'll have a pretty aggressive release schedule with that. So I'm really looking forward to this. I'm a little bit concerned about how they're going to roll them out, like if I have to pay for each one or if it's just like I buy the collection and then download them as they're available. I'm not sure. I'm not sure that they've announced that, but I'm really excited about this. Halo Reach, I haven't played the story yet, so I'm excited to get into that. And the multiplayer in Halo is just hard to beat, so I'm really looking forward to this. Yeah, I don't know. How about you guys? You guys, I mean, we played a lot of Halo back in the day, so you guys have to be looking forward to this, right?
Yeah, I'm interested for sure in playing some Halo. I don't know about like cost, maybe, but that might be a concern. But I'm definitely like I'll play some Halo. I'll play some Halo 2 or some. I mean, we played a lot of LAN,
yeah,
back in the day on Halo. So I'm on board. I'll try it out.
Yeah, no, I'm ready for it. I'm excited. I want to play Reach. I've never played it. I've actually never played past Halo 2. I've never played any other Halo than 1 or 2. But I want to give it a shot and play the story, because it always seemed like a lot of fun, but I never wanted to buy an Xbox.
Yeah, and Reach has this cool mode that's like a co-op mode where you're doing just waves and waves of Covenant, or you're on a map, obviously, and waves of Covenant are coming, and you're just trying to survive as long as possible. It's awesome. Really fun. When I was in college, we'd play that, but as my friends would always come into my room and be like, "Oh, I heard the people of Reach are in danger. We need to go save them." And so then we'd run up to whoever had the game, and we'd go play the game for a while. So I'm really looking forward to that. So that's great. Is the Master Chief Collection, and that's going to be coming out this year. So next up we have some board game news. Derek, you want to take us through that?
Yeah. So Lord of the Rings Journeys in Middle Earth, got a new preview article, that kind of explains how the decks work and the different roles players can take. And then we got a live playthrough video, from Fantasy Flight Games. So I think we talked about Lord of the Rings Journeys in Middle Earth a little bit. It looks similar to like a Mansions of Madness or a Star Wars Imperial Assault, where it's an app driven game. But this one obviously takes place in Middle Earth. And so watching the playthrough, I'm very intrigued by this, because Imperial Assault was more, here's your mission, go do it, and it's just, you know, tactical combat. This has more role-playing elements to it. It's almost like a light version of like a role-playing game. So you're on a world map, and you're presented with different scenarios or questions, and you can put in different responses, and those will lead you down different branching paths. And then the combat is still, you know, that tactical combat, which could be cool. Yeah, Evan, you watched the playthrough too. What do you think about it?
Yeah, I think it's interesting, and I'm going back and forth as I think about it, to be honest. The fact that the app kind of works as the DM is an interesting concept, and it's nice that you don't need a DM or something like somebody running the game. It's everybody has a player, and the app is making the app is making the decisions about how the map is laid out and how the enemies attack and things like that. So that's kind of nice. But then at the same time, it feels like the app is so integral to the way the game works that it's like, first of all, if they ever stop supporting the app, you're going to have some way to do that, to play the game without it, maybe, which I don't know. I wouldn't worry too much about that, because I think they'll support the game for a while. But then the other thing is that it feels like you're spending so much time looking at the screen. Like you almost have to look at the app more than you look at the board. Cause it'll tell you, place this tile in this position, and you have to look at it and line your board up with the screen. And some of that seems a little fiddly to me. And then it's like, place this tile here. And then when your character goes there, you have to click in the app that your character went to this space and flipped over this tile. And it'll tell you, like, you're exploring this area and you see footprints or whatever, and then it'll trigger some events off of that. So I don't know. That part doesn't get me super excited. some of the combat and or like the testing mechanics for doing various skills checks is kind of interesting, because every character has certain skills, are kind of typical D&D skills of strength, agility, blah blah blah, and it'll tell you like test your wisdom. And so when it says that, you flip over a certain amount of cards from your deck and it'll have successes or failures, and you add your, or you flip over the amount of cards based on your score. So if you have like a 4, you'd flip over 4 cards, and then you measure your successes based on that. So that's kind of interesting. I kind of like the no dice approach.
To me, it kind of feels like this is Fantasy Flight's response to evolve Imperial Assault to be more like Gloomhaven a little bit, which I think could be interesting. I mean, Ryan, like you like Gloomhaven. I just like Gloomhaven doesn't have the app support, and you're kind of managing, you know, like being the DM in Gloomhaven while playing. But yeah, I think the app might make it a little too involved, but I don't know. I really would like to try this game out just to see, but I don't know if that's going to be an option, and it's kind of a big price tag.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, that's Lord of the Rings: Journeys in Middle Earth, and that will be coming out, I believe, some like this summer. Is it coming out, Evan?
Sounds right. I can't remember if they've released it. Fantasy Flight Games is notorious for having bad release dates. Like they won't tell you until.
Yeah. If I had to take a guess, this will be dropping at Gen Con. That's my guess.
That's
it could
true.
Come out before that, but that would be their big. You know, they always have something big, exciting at Gen Con, and. Maybe that's too far out yet. I mean, Gen Con's still 5 months away, and this feels pretty polished for waiting 5 months to release it. But I don't know. Stranger things have happened. We'll see. Ryan, we got some Star Wars rumors. You want to talk about it?
Yeah, I'm very excited. So the rumors are that the Game of Thrones showrunners, David Benioff and D.B. Weiss, are going to be rumored doing a Star Wars movie set in the Old Republic timeline. And that's really exciting. For myself, playing the Knights of the Old Republic video games, I really like that era of Star Wars. And I think a lot of, the EU fans are kind of excited for this and getting pumped and kind of getting ready for what I think is going to be a grittier Star Wars movie. And I'm pretty pumped. How about you guys?
Yeah, this was super exciting when I heard about this.
So what's the validity of these rumors? Like, I mean, I don't know. I hope it's true. I don't want to get my hopes up is what I'm saying. If it's, yeah.
Basically, there was a company who's worked on all the Star Wars movies in the past, and they leaked something about Old Republic. I'm trying to find the original article. But yeah, it kind of blew up online and everybody jump to that.
So according to the link that Derek gave me, there's a source who has worked on every single Disney Star Wars movie, like as reporting it, confirmed that there has been they've been approached about working on a movie this coming autumn, getting started in the process, and it's not dealing with the Rian Johnson trilogy. It is the Game of Thrones guy's first movie, in quotes, and it's set during the Old Republic. And Disney wants to open this timeline beyond just the Skywalkers.
Nice. And they want to appeal to a more like Game of Thrones style audience. So very
interesting. Yeah, I feel that time period could work too, because you have like the Jedi, or more like the Republic Sith Wars, because like Siths are not just the dark Jedi, right? The, like for a while, Sith was a different.
Yeah, it's more of a gray. I mean, it's kind of like that Game of Thrones. Like each they're not just strictly pure evil characters. There's a lot of gray characters. There's not just good or bad.
Yeah, so I'll have to see. I did really like those games. I wonder, because that's all not canon anymore, since those all came out before the Disney acquisition. So I wonder if they will, how much they'll base it off that. I kind of feel like they might.
I think they will. I think they'll take a lot of into account. You look at like how they brought Thrawn in, and Thrawn is canon now. You know, I think they like to, you know, give a nod to all the, you know, all the legend stories essentially.
Cool.
Could be cool. So next, we got a reader news tip. Thank you, Tyler. He informed us before we heard the news breaking. James Gunn is back as the director of Guardians of the Galaxy 3. This was super surprising. Disney did a complete 180 on James Gunn. He was fired from Disney earlier in the year, last year, for some unfortunate tweets from, 5-10 years ago that he apologized for, but Disney chose to let him go. And I thought that was the end of it. I thought that we were going to get somebody new for Guardians 3. And just out of the blue, they kind of said, no, he's back. And I think some of that had to do with the fact that he was then hired by Warner Brothers and he's making a new Suicide Squad. A new Suicide Squad already again. I think Marvel and Disney saw that and they're like, crap, our best talent's getting poached by DC. We need him back. And I'm very excited about it.
Yeah,
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think the actors probably had a lot to do with that, too. I know that Dave Bautista, who plays Drax, right?
Yes.
He was very outspoken about how he was not happy with that decision. And
he wasn't going to be in Guardians 3 unless Gunn was attached, is what he publicly said.
Right. So that probably had a lot to do with it, too.
Yeah, I think so, because I mean, some of the rumors that I'd seen, and I can't confirm any of it, but like, the head of Marvel, I think, was pretty set in the fact that Gunn wasn't going to be coming back. And I think Batista and maybe some of the other actors went to, I can't think of the guy's name. Is it like Bob Igor, mm-hmm. the actual mm-hmm. head of Disney?
Yep.
I think they went to him and he stepped in and said, hey, let's set this right.
Interesting.
Yeah. Pretty exciting. So yeah. Should be good. In other Marvel news, the runtime for Avengers Endgame has been announced, and everybody better be ready to settle in because you're going to be there for 3 hours and 2 minutes.
I'm going to dehydrate myself before I go to this movie. I'm not going to have any pop or popcorn.
Yep.
I'm going to sit there like a good little boy and not move out of my seat.
I know. I'm not going to be able to drink any pop or nope. They need to, I was telling my wife and my mother-in-law about the runtime, and my mother-in-law goes, are they going to have an intermission in the middle so everybody can go to the bathroom? So yeah, that's, pretty long, but I mean, that's fine. The Russo brothers had, I remember reading an article that they were basically told they weren't worried about length, do whatever you need to do to tell the story. And it's clear that Marvel was not worried about length. So, we get a 3-hour Avengers movie and I'm ready for it. I'm ready for it. We're less than a month away now.
Crazy.
Yeah. All right. Moving on, there is a report out that Nintendo, they are planning 2 new versions of the Switch, a premium version with upgraded specs and a cheaper portable model. Evan, you pointed this one out to me. What are your thoughts on this?
I guess I think it's fine. I mean, if you look at Microsoft and Sony, they both have several upgraded versions of their current generation console. I think the portable one, to me, it kind of sounds like this means they're doing away with any sort of 3DS or anything in that line, like basically the kind of the Game Boy line, right? Which has been such a staple for Nintendo for so long.
It'll be the end of an era, kind of. But I mean, they were kind of ramping it down. You know, they're ramping down the 3DS, and everybody kind of assumed that this was going to happen. But I like that there's going to be a cheaper price point, hopefully, for it.
Yeah.
Which could be a pretty good option for people who don't want to take the plunge, Ryan, and maybe hop in on the Switch. So,
or for people that don't want to take the plunge, maybe there will be a bunch for sale as people look to upgrade to the premium. So, Ryan, if you want to buy my Switch so I can upgrade to the premium, maybe we could do that.
We might be able to make a deal.
So,
but no, I think it'll be good.
Yeah. My one hesitation is that I'd be a little mad if they made a premium or an upgraded version and then made games only for that. But I highly doubt that's going to be the case. I would be very surprised if they did it.
Yeah, I think they're following the same model as Sony and Microsoft, and Sony and Microsoft don't do that. So I don't foresee that being an issue, but who knows?
Yeah, and I don't think I will get the premium version unless I do get somebody to buy my Switch, I guess. But I still don't think I'll do it. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm pretty happy with my Switch, and it would have to be a pretty substantial jump at a pretty good price point for me to do it. But
yeah,
I think it's cool to have the options
for sure.
Yeah. Well, next up, Gearbox has put out a reveal trailer for Borderlands 3, and it looks amazing. They didn't announce a release date, but they said there would be more info available on April 3rd. They also announced a Game of the Year edition for Borderlands 1, and if you already own it on PC, you're going to get the Game of the Year edition for free, which is pretty exciting because I do have it on Steam, and I will be getting the Game of the Year edition. So yeah, Evan, Ryan, what are your thoughts? You guys have played Borderlands, right?
I actually haven't. I need to.
I also have not.
Oh my God. Whoa.
Well, all right. We should.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that sounds like we got something in our future then.
Yeah. I've thought about
it. I played all of Borderlands 1, and I played a little bit of Borderlands 2, but I never owned it. But I'll probably get 3, and I would definitely go back and play Borderlands 1 with you guys.
I'd consider that too. I was looking on Steam the other day, and I think right now Borderlands is $20, and I would imagine that's because the Game of the Year edition is coming out. So they're like, well, if people are going to buy that just to get the Game of the Year for free, we'll keep it at $20. But Borderlands 2 right now through, I don't remember the date, like April 5th or something like that, is only $5. And I've been meaning to buy that. So you guys need to remind me before that's up that I need to buy Borderlands 2 for $5 on Steam.
Yeah, I jump in on that.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. All right. But we have a plan.
Yeah. And I've not played it, but I've seen people play, and it does look really fun. It's a it's like a looter shooter, right? Where you're trying to collect better loot and stuff
and
like that.
It's class based too, which is kind of fun. And it's just a fun, like, the world is fun, and there's some there's a lot of humor, and I don't know. It's just a cool setting and some really good games. They've got good storylines too. So yeah, the third one looks pretty exciting. I know a lot of people are very hyped about this, and it should be a good time. All right, next we're going to move to some board game news. WizKids has announced a new Star Trek dexterity flicking game called Star Trek Conflict in the Neutral Zone. And I love that name because it's so wonderful. You'll be taking control of Federation or Klingon ships, represented by little like wooden or plastic discs, similar to like Flick 'em Up, that style of game. And you'll be flicking the ships around the map to battle other ships or gather resources, which can then be used to build more ships. It looks super, super fun. And it's going to be coming out later this summer. I love a good like dexterity game, and this seems pretty cool. I might have to check this one out. Next up, Antoine Bautza, the designer of Seven Wonders, has a new drafting game headed our way called Draftosaurus. yeah, right? We're killing the puns right now. In this game, each player will have their own dino park that they need to populate by drafting different dino meeples and passing the rest on to their neighboring players. But each pen in your park will have specific requirements for different dinos and what can be placed there. It looks like a really like fun family game, and the dino meeples are really cool and super cute. And I'll definitely be checking this one out. It's not a very big game, so it should be a pretty good price point. It's going to be out sometime in Q2. But yeah, I mean, you guys like drafting games. This sounds kind of fun. I don't know.
Yeah. I was just going to say that I feel like drafting is a mechanic or like a type of game that I haven't really been playing a lot of lately, but I always do like them. Like, I love Sushi Go Party. Seven Wonders was really fun too.
We played a lot of Seven Wonders back in when we were first getting into board games.
So this is a meeple drafting game?
Yeah, so you're going to have a handful of like different dino meeples, and they're all shaped differently and colored differently. It looks super cool.
I like that.
Yeah, and you just have like a little park board in front of you that you have to place the little dinos into different pens. So yeah, could be cool. Keeping on the Antoine Bautza train, Funforge has announced a sequel to the very popular game Takedo called Namiji. Takedo was about trying to have the most enjoyable and relaxing vacation you could have traveling across Japan. It sounds like a pretty lame theme, but it's actually pretty cool. Namiji is going to play similar to Takedo in that, like, the movement mechanic will be the same, but you're going to be traveling by boat, like, visiting different islands. So you'll be taking in, like, the different sites. You'll be whale watching and fishing and catching shrimp, and just having a nice, relaxing time. Namiji will be out in stores later this year, and this looks really fun. Like, the art looks gorgeous. It'll be done by the same artist that did Takedo. Have you guys played Takedo? Are you familiar with it at all?
I have not played it, but I know you've mentioned it before, and I've always wanted to play.
Yeah, it's just, it's really gorgeous artwork, and some people say it's more of an activity than a game, because you're just kind of moving along this track, and you're drafting different cards and taking different actions, and it's not super competitive, but it's just, I don't know, it's just fun. I like Takedo. I don't own it, but I would play it anytime offered to me. And Namiji looks pretty cool. It's the same, like I said, same artist, same style. It's just you're going to be traveling around in a boat and doing all these boat things. So look for that one later this year. Next up, Plaid Hat Games has announced Abomination, the Heir of Frankenstein. So this is the game I'm most excited about from all of these announcements. It's a worker placement game where you are going to take on the role of a scientist tasked by Frankenstein to create the Bride of Frankenstein. So you'll deploy assistants. It's set in France, in Paris, and you're going to be deploying assistants to raise money, research different scientific techniques, and gather resources, which includes buying, harvesting, and digging up different body parts for your monster. All while trying to manage your like sanity or humanity level, so you don't go crazy from like this thing that you're creating. This sounds awesome, you guys. I'm really pumped about this game. I love a good worker placement game, and the theme really hits it for me. Do you guys have any thoughts about this?
Yeah, I agree. A worker placement is, right now, especially because I'm in love with Viticulture, is one of my top types of games. So, yeah, I'd sign up for almost any worker placement. I'm not a big, like, I don't know. What would you call this, horror genre, I guess? I don't know.
I just think the theme is cool. I think
it is cool. Yeah.
You're a mad scientist, like harvesting body parts to build the Bride of Frankenstein. Like that's fun. I don't know.
I can get on board with that. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it looks cool. It's available for pre-order right now through Plaid Hat's website, and it'll be released this summer. And if you pre-order from them, you can get free shipping right now too. So, nice. Pretty good option. Pretty good option there. This might be a Gen Con release that I look at when we go to Gen Con. So, yeah. That was Abomination, the Heir of Frankenstein. Finally, Evan, we have a little Twitch Prime announcement for everybody. You want to go into that?
Sure. So, Twitch Prime has this loot system, and I honestly, it seems there's a lot of deals on there, and I don't really look at them as much as I should, but Twitch Prime is, if you have Amazon Prime, you automatically have Twitch Prime. So all you need to do is like link those together. And then also if you do that, you get a free Twitch subscription every month that you can use too. So if you have a favorite streamer that you want to subscribe to, you can use that Prime subscription for that. But anyway, the big announcement that we have for this time is that starting last week, you can get a free year of Nintendo's online service through Twitch Prime, which is really a great deal. I mean, it's only $20 for a year, but I mean, you're saving $20. So that's great. And the cool thing about it is that it stacks with any existing subscription you have. So I had already bought a year. I was about 2 months into my subscription. And then I signed up for this. So I'm going to be getting, after my current year is up, they'll have added a year to that, which is great. So it's really easy to sign up for. You can just Google it, or we can even post the link. Actually, plug for the Discord. We have the link posted in our Discord channel, and we've had a few deals that have come out over the last few weeks that we've been posting in there. Like, for instance, the Elder Scrolls 3 Morrowind, which is my favorite game of all time. It was free for 1 day a little bit earlier in the week, so we put that out on the Discord. So if you want to keep an eye on deals, join the Discord, and we got you there. So anyway, back to this free Nintendo Online. All you have to do is you sign up for 60 days, and then you have to like renew it for the final 9 months or whatever later on. But Really easy to do. All you have to do is link those accounts and enter in your Nintendo account information, and they'll add it to your account. So a really great deal there.
Yeah, and even if you don't use Twitch to watch anything, you can create a Twitch account for free, and it'll link to your Amazon Prime, and you can get this free deal. It's great.
Right.
All right, well, that's it for the news. So I'm going to throw it over to Evan to talk about our discussion topic.
All right, well, our discussion topic for today comes from the fact that we have talked quite a bit about movies, we talked quite a bit about video games, board games, but we haven't really talked much about books. We always mention what books we're reading in our updates, but we've never really had a chance to dive into some books that we like. So we've decided for this discussion, we're going to outline or talk about some of our favorite sci-fi / fantasy book series. I will say that we left off some of the big ones here. We none of us listed Lord of the Rings, even though we all love Lord of the Rings. We didn't list A Song of Ice and Fire or Game of Thrones because we all like those and it's very popular. Harry Potter was another one that we all thought of, but we didn't include on here. So, you know, I think it's those are popular enough that most people listening to this have probably heard / read those. So we left those off the list, but we do all enjoy those. So anyway, let's go ahead and get started. So Ryan, you want to give us the first series on your list?
Yeah, the first series on my list is the Culture series. It's by Ian Banks. The main theme of the novels is it's like it deals with situations. It's like a space opera, but the situations between like an idealistic like superpower, the culture, which is the main driving force of the series, is this civilization and how they deal with different space cultures that don't necessarily share what they view the world should be. And this culture is built, made up of humans, of aliens. They actually created a very advanced AI system, and they call them the Mind. And the Mind like controls their spaceships and like organizes their economy and their world, so that actually the people of the culture spend more time doing things of whatever they want instead of actually working. It's like a post-scarcity society is what these all take place in. And he said that he actually created this as to be a polar opposite of at the time, like a lot of the American sci-fi that is coming out. So it's very different from a lot of sci-fi that you would read. But it's very good that each book is actually an anthology. So you could read them individually, and there's just very minor connections between each story. It's not anything that you would need to have built on to read. I enjoy it. I've read a couple of the books. I think there's 9 or 10 in the series. It's just hard to find, honestly, the series anywhere in the United States. And if I want to read it, like I have to interlibrary loan it, and that costs me like $3 or $4. So I just haven't been reading it as much as I'd like to. Derek, what is the first book on your list?
My first series is the First Law Trilogy by Joe Abercrombie. And I know we've talked about this a little bit because, Ryan, you were reading them. But I love this trilogy. It's kind of if you enjoy A Song of Ice and Fire, this is kind of the next step. It's very gritty. It's very real, pretty dark, but there's humor to it. The characters, there aren't good characters and bad characters. There are real characters, if that makes sense. Like it's very gray. Everybody has their flaws. Nobody's truly evil and nobody's truly, you know, a paragon. I just love it. It's got enough, magic and mysticism to it as well. There could always be something crazy happening. I don't love just like a straight, like no magic setting when I read fantasy. So I kind of like Game of Thrones, you know, kind of like A Song of Ice and Fire. There's that mythical aspect to it. And these are just a great read. Joe Abercrombie has become one of my favorite authors. And he's got a lot of other books set in that same world, that explore different characters, but the main trilogy is called the First Law Trilogy, and I highly recommend it. Evan, why don't you tell us about your first series?
All right. Well, I I preempted this by saying we left out some of the more popular series, and then I went and added a pretty popular series to my list. But it's really good, so I mean, there's a reason it's popular. The Ender's Game series by Orson Scott Card is one of my all-time favorite sci-fi series, and I got turned on to these by I took a philosophy and science fiction class when I was in college, and I really loved that class. It was really interesting to dive into these philosophical topics in the setting of sci-fi books. And so I had a group project where we had to pick out a book and read it together and then present on it in front of the class. And the book that we chose was Speaker for the Dead, which is the second book in this series. And it's kind of, it's a somewhat loose sequel. So I actually read Speaker for the Dead before I read Ender's Game. And I was still able to pick up what was going on. And then I went back and read Ender's Game. So the thing that I really love about this series kind of sounds like what you were talking about with the Culture series, Ryan, where there's a lot of interesting interaction with how the humans interact with aliens or like non-human species. And it really, there's quite a bit of difference really between the styles of, like, especially Ender's Game and Speaker for the Dead. Like, Ender's Game is almost more of a young adult feel book. There's some action in there, and it's like got a wartime setting, where Speaker for the Dead is a little bit, I guess, slower as far as action goes. But I loved it because there's some, I don't know, I guess some really interesting philosophical things that are going on in that series. So overall, I just really love, especially those two books. I've read the sequel to Speaker for the Dead, which is Xenocide, and I think I started the fourth one, which, if I remember right, is, sorry if I'm wrong, but I think it's Children of the Mind. And that one, just like those two, Xenocide and Children of the Mind, get kind of heavy, and I don't know, they're a lot slower, so I didn't end up finishing that one. But I really love the first part of that series. There's also kind of in parallel, he wrote another series called the Shadow series that takes the same events and then presents them from different characters' point of view. The first one of that is called Ender's Shadow, and it follows one of Ender's friends as the main events of the story are going on. So I've not read those, but I've always heard really good things about them. So I need to add those to the very long list of books that I need to read. But yeah, that's my first series, Ender's Game, and it's a great sci-fi series. So yeah, Ryan, you want to take us into the next one you got?
Yeah, the next one I have is just generally, it's the new Star Wars canon books. There's not a lot to say. I've read a couple of them, Thrawn and Ahsoka, and then I've also read Dark Disciple. And it's just, and I like that one. I mean, the first two, obviously, their namesakes are the characters that they feature. But Dark Disciple features Asajj Ventress as one of the main characters of Clone Wars fame. And it's just really good. I just like reading Star Wars, and it builds the world further, and it's just something that I enjoy. And I think you guys have each read a couple of them, or at least Derek has.
Oh yeah, I love them. I love the new canon. The thing that it's annoying is when they reset all this canon, Ryan, we talked and we're like, okay, we can now it's actually attainable to read all of the canon and know all of the official lore for Star Wars. And then they started churning out these books, and I'm so far behind.
Yeah, the dream is dead.
And they've got all the comics. Yeah, there's a lot.
There's a lot in the comics.
But there's too much now.
Yeah. The only one I've read is Thrawn, and it's by the same author who did the original Thrawn trilogy, which is now old canon, but
Timothy Zahn.
Yep. It's really highly regarded. I've not read those. Maybe someday I'll read those. But anyway, Thrawn, I thought was really interesting. I almost, now that I'm reading, watching Rebels, I haven't got to the point where Thrawn is introduced in Rebels yet, but I know he does eventually. So after I get through Rebels, I might want to go back and read it again just to have a little bit of that context. But it was a good book. I did enjoy it.
Yeah, I think I was reading it as he was being introduced in Rebels, so it kind of played off each other, and I really enjoyed that aspect of it. Derek, what do you have on your second to the list?
My second series is a pretty recent series for me. It's called The Red Rising Trilogy by Pierce Brown, and I know, again, I've talked about this on some early episodes of the pod, but this is a sci-fi series. It takes place in a very distant future. Humans have expanded across our solar system and different galaxies, and they've been not necessarily bred, but they've been selected to reproduce and create these different a caste system. And they've been genetically modified to be different colors. So the golds are like the ruling class, and there are the silvers and bronzes. And then you go to kind of the middle class, which are the doctors and the IT people and the artists. And then you have the lower class, which are the pinks and the reds and the browns, and they kind of the servant class. And then the reds are the lowest class, which are like the mining class. They basically are forced to live underground and mine, to provide for the rest of the classes. And, this book centers around, one red who, through a series of events, is transformed into a gold and goes undercover to try to lead a resistance, into, overthrowing the ruling class. And the first book, he goes to like an officer's school for golds, and it plays out like war games. It plays out almost like a Hunger Games situation, which is kind of fun. And then, the next two books really move on from that and really ramp up the intensity. And I just enjoyed it. I couldn't put the first book down. I just flew through it. And the second and third books were very well done as well. It's good sci-fi. It's just a fun story. That's the Red Rising trilogy by Pierce Brown. Evan, what do you got next?
All right. Well, I got another pretty popular one next, but I'm going for it. Next up, I have the Legend of Dritz series by R.A. Salvatore. So that's, again, a very popular series in the world of fantasy, but they are just so good. These books have been coming out. I think the first trilogy, which was the Icewind Dale trilogy, came out in the late 80s. And he's just been pumping out Dritz books since then. So, I don't know. I really, really enjoy these. I read a lot of them in high school, so they're kind of probably geared more towards that age, I would say. But I've gone back and read them since I've been out of high school and college, and I still enjoyed them. And they're pretty easy to read. You can fly through them pretty quick. I think for a while there, I was able to do a digital checkout for these, so I was going through at least one a week for a while. So yeah, they're pretty quick. My favorite of them is the Dark Elf trilogy. So the Dark Elf trilogy was one of the first ones he wrote. It was like a prequel, I guess, to the Icewind Dale trilogy. And it talks about Dritz escape from his homeworld, which is the Underdark, where the Dark Elves live. And like the Dark Elves are a very evil group of people. Their society is very chaotic and crazy. And so it talks about his growing up in that and not sharing the same morals and values as they have, and his decision to finally leave and go to the surface. And the whole series talks about his struggle with his heritage, and like at first he's not accepted, and then he eventually becomes a hero and is recognized and stuff like that. And that, I don't know, I mean every trilogy kind of has its own conflict and everything like that, so they're really good, really fun to read. I would say also that there's a kind of a spinoff to those called the Cell Swords trilogy, and I actually almost like this more than the other books. They don't center on Dritz at all. They're about Jarl Axel. I think it's a hard name to say, but Jarl Axel. He's a dark elf mercenary, and Artemis Entreri, who's Dritz's arch nemesis, and they're both kind of somewhat evil characters, or at least somewhat gray. And it talks about them, like it centers on them and how they basically end up going on this quest that ends up kind of saving the world. But it's like they're not really the heroic type. They're more they kind of turn into anti-heroes for this trilogy. So I really like that. And you can almost read that one as a standalone. So if you don't want to dive into all the stuff with Dritz and don't want to go down that rabbit hole, you could just read this one trilogy, and it's really good. So yeah, that's mine. Legend of Dritz by R.A. Salvatore. So, Ryan, I think you got one more for us.
Yes, I have one more. I think it's a sci-fi book. The author has said that she doesn't believe it's a sci-fi book. It's more literary fiction. However, it won the Arthur C. Clarke Award which is the best sci-fi novel published in the UK. So it won that in 2015. It is Station 11 by Emily St. John Mandel. And it takes place in the United States, in like the Midwesty Great Lakes region. And there is like a fictional swine flu pandemic that kills most of the population in the world. And it's kind of along the same lines as like the Culture series or Ender's Game, in the sense that it deals with the philosophy of how like you live your life after something like that, and what you do in a situation as far as how you interact with people and how you carry on and move on, and how you would rebuild society. And it's probably one of the best books I've ever read, actually. And it, Brianna and I have, my wife have both read it, and it was, we'd put it up there in one of the favorite books that we've ever read. I would recommend this to anyone. I think it has a very wide appeal. Derek, what do you have for your last?
All right. Well, this is a pretty, if you read fantasy books, this is a pretty popular, series, but this is kind of where it all started for me. I'm going to talk about the Dragonlance Chronicles. So I read these in like eighth grade, and this was my intro to fantasy novels. And it kind of led me down the path where I'm at now, where I pretty much only read fantasy, a little bit of sci-fi, but mostly fantasy. So Dragonlance was actually a Dungeons and Dragons setting, in the early 80s. And they wanted, they came to the book publishing company, and they wanted novels written that told the story of the world and of the setting. And this was kind of the first time this had ever been done. So Margaret Weiss and Tracy Hickman wrote the Dragonlance Chronicles in 1984. And they were kind of the trailblazers for modern fantasy. I mean, obviously Tolkien, but this kind of bridged the gap. And a lot of times now people talk about fantasy tropes, you know, and how everything's the same in fantasy. Well, Hickman and Weiss started those tropes, only it was super like trailblazing at the time. Like these things didn't exist. You know, they had the angsty mage and the goody-goody paladin, and, you know, and the half elf ranger who felt out of place in with both humans and elves. And they're just fantastic books. If you are new to fantasy and want a good intro to, you know, high fantasy, the Dragonlance Chronicles are awesome. They read easy enough for a younger audience too. So if you've got kids that are kind of, you know, that middle school to high school age, this is a great introduction. It's very good versus evil, very cut and dry, and they're just great books, and they really set the stage for my love of fantasy novels. So that is the Dragonlance Chronicles. All right, Evan, what do you have for your last one?
All right, my last one is a little bit less popular, I think. This is a trilogy I just read, and I've talked about it a little bit on the pod before, but I'm going to go into a little bit more detail here. So it's the Powder Mage trilogy by Brian McClelland. So the Powder Mage trilogy is a fantasy series, and it is set, instead of being set in like a medieval time period, like a lot of fantasy, it's actually more of a revolutionary time period. So they have some technology that existed in like the revolutionary time period, you know, 1600s, 1700s, whatever. So they have muskets, they have like printing presses, they have horse drawn carriages, which I guess is probably not just revolutionary, but whatever. They have all this stuff that you think of from that time period. But then they also still have the traditional magic that you see in fantasy. So like elemental mages, I guess, is a big part of it. So the way the world is set up is that there's this this continent, and there's 9 kingdoms on the continent, and each one is ruled by a king, and then they have this this group of powerful mages that act as like their royal guard, basically. And so the country that this is all centered on is super corrupt. And the book starts off with a revolution with one of the generals from the army actually overthrowing this royal guard and like killing all the traditional mages and actually killing the king and starting this revolution. And it talks about his rise to power and like how he's trying to save his country from the corrupt king and all that stuff. And he leads a group of people called the Powder Mages. And the Powder Mages are a group of people that have magical abilities centered around guns and muskets. So they can ignite powder with their minds. They can, when they shoot their guns, they can make the bullets fly further, or they can like curve them a little bit. And it really gets into this interesting, like, so the first book is really, there's a lot of the political intrigue that you'll get from maybe, say, Game of Thrones, especially like, think second book or second season Game of Thrones. So you get into a lot of that, like wheeling and dealing, like political underhandedness and things like that. That's really interesting. And then at the end of the first book and moving into the later ones, you start to get into more of like the higher fantasy of these like really powerful mages that are basically gods that are coming to try to overthrow what the Powder Mages have done and kind of reestablish the former kingdoms that were set up. So, I really enjoyed it. They're pretty quick reads, not terribly difficult or anything. And I know that he's come out with some more books since then in the same setting. So I'm wanting to check those out at some point. But anyway, that's the Powder Mage trilogy by Brian McClellan. And I think with that, that's all the books we wanted to talk about. So I think we're about ready to wrap up here. Again, we want to thank you all for listening. And I would again encourage you all to check out our Discord if you haven't already. We love being able to talk to you guys. We've had a few little discussions, and again, if news comes up, somebody will bring it up. Like Tyler, for instance, told us about this James Gunn news, which we really appreciate, and we had a little discussion in the Discord about that. So it's really fun to be able to talk in more of a personal setting that way. So check that out if you're interested. And we, as always, we would love to hear any suggestions that you have. And we thank you all for listening and hope you have a good couple of weeks. And we'll catch you next time.